Did you hit record?
Yeah.
Episode 157. Double everyone. Moving down the street. Chuck, is there anything? Are you bees deep in exclusively New York Ninja pages, or are you bees deep in other things the past couple days? Be honest.
Oh, well. I'm bees deep in something else. After hours, I'll just say. Good.
That's the right answer. You're hired.
Not spreading to my normal day business. I'm keeping the lines drawn. Thank you.
You passed.
But it's true. It is true that Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom is upon us. The 6-year wait from the last Zelda game.
Wow, 6 years.
6 years. Can you believe it's been that long since Breath of the Wild?
I my mind started just racing because, yeah, I got my Switch at my old house in Jersey, and that was
2017
years ago.
Yeah, it's it's something else. It is, and look, I love it. They did a good job, and I watch this channel, Digital Foundry, and these nerds. I love these nerds. They talk about, I have this thing where I watch YouTube channels that are very technical and I don't understand 75% of it. But by listening and watching them, it just makes me feel a little smarter, even though I'm not really taking it in. Like I'm sure I'm learning some stuff, but like,
yeah.
But I don't know, because this channel, Digital Foundry, they don't mess around. You know, I mean, they'll give their opinions on whether the game's fun or not, but they're like specifically about the technology used and the software used to make games. And they drill down, they count pixels to talk about the resolutions and all the technology that's being used. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it's, everyone keeps calling for the death knell of Switch, but somehow Nintendo, again, made this amazing game, open world. It's running at 30 frames per second. There's a little bit of slowdown during when you use one of the magic powers. But the thing is, Digital Foundry was worried because they saw, I don't know if they had advanced code or they saw video of it running, and there was tons of slowdown on this game. And they were like, this is not good.
Yeah.
But Nintendo, they released a day one patch that fixed it almost completely. And that's like a super rare thing. Like these day one patches almost never actually like fix things.
Yeah. Yeah. If you follow video games recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's the story of the year, right? All these games just coming out and S in the bed, especially on PC.
Yeah.
Doesn't look good. But anyway, so the game, I'm, this is not an original thought. But it feels very much like Breath of the Wild, but what probably more what they set out to do originally. The world's a bit bigger because you have the same map, but things are a little different. And now you can go below into the underground.
Whoa.
And you can go, there's these sky islands everywhere. You go up there and you got all these new mechanics. People are calling it like Zelda Minecraft, and it's kind of like that because you can like build anything. Like you can like, you see this piece of wood, you can fuse it to these wheels, build yourself a car, and you get like these motors and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, and you have to collect batteries.
Anywhere in the world?
Yeah. Well, it's very smart because they have all around Hyrule now, they have construction supplies everywhere with like tarps over them, and it's just like wood and like wheels and stuff because after the events of Breath of the Wild, they're rebuilding the world. So it's like,
this construction company
has all these planks of wood set up all around the world. So everywhere you go, you can build something if you need it. You need to build a raft across this river because you don't have enough hearts to swim across. There you go. Build yourself a raft. And I'm not one, I don't like usually like building that kind of stuff, but they, Nintendo, they're good at making things, accessible.
Yeah. Yeah. They're masters. They do a good job at that kind of stuff. I I believe you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm enjoying it. The game, I love the opening. I hate cinematic openings, but this had a nice, quick, like catch you up on what's going on. These are the new stakes, mm-hmm. and then drop you into this new world.
Oh, wow.
And you're like, oh, okay. Here I go. And it's just,
are you playing handheld? You playing on the TV?
I play Zelda on the TV. I prefer it a bit big. Yeah. And I like the pro controller. Yeah. I can't. My hands get all tight.
Yeah.
I play on that.
I was just thinking that because my Joy-Cons, you know, the top right shoulder, mm-hmm. like it's like a 60% success rate on hitting that thing. Oh, so, you know, like when I'm playing Skyrim and stuff.
That's not.
But so I would use the pro controller that I had to buy and spend money on, and I haven't really technically used yet. I just every couple months I plug it into the USB charger, just to charge it up to make me feel like I'm getting my money's worth.
It is that controller gets it doesn't right, get a great rap, but it is one of my favorite controllers of right all here. Time.
I got it right here, Chuck, because I just recently charged it.
It's a beautiful. Right. It's a great controller. I love that controller. Mine's getting a little. I think I need to clean it. Need to whip out the old isopropyl. Clean it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. And then, you know, another, I don't really touch my Switch, and mostly it's because, like, I know, forgive me.
Yeah.
But I know as soon as I, like, lift it up out of my dock and I see how disgusting it is because I share everything with my kids at this point. And I will probably just like look, I would put it back in a dock and walk away because I'd be like, this is not mine anymore. I need to prioritize a new Switch for myself.
Yeah. God, I can't wait for these prices.
Kids are disgusting.
These Switch prices out of control.
Right?
Yeah.
Randomly this weekend, I was.
Go ahead.
Like, I'm about to say something that should have been 3 years ago out of my mouth. Yeah. But randomly, I was in a GameStop this weekend. Because it was next to the Mother's Day card store. And they had the OLED Switch next to the original Switch.
Oh my God.
And I was like, this screen is gorgeous over
incredible.
Here.
Incredible.
And bigger.
I know. I look at mine. I still have my original because I refused to spend $350 to upgrade just for that screen.
Right.
But
yeah,
you look at that screen. I look at my Switch now and I look at it like it's a mutt. Like a mutt that just came in off the street shitting in my house and I just have no respect for it.
Yeah. But somehow
look at that disgusting.
It's somehow it's your responsibility.
Look at this screen. I can't believe I played any games on this disgusting LCD screen. It's sick.
Yeah.
But yeah, every time I go, I see it in like Target or something. I'm like, my God, look at this. Look at this OLED screen.
I know.
Ugh. No, I'm going to hold out.
I mean, I hate the speculation, but you got to wonder what's next and if there's a price drop coming. You know, it's an exciting time.
Yeah, if there's and you know, whatever the Switch 2 is, I just can't. Will they? This is turning into a games podcast, but.
Totally.
The way the generations have gone, like, can you, like, if anyone can get away with yeeting the next library, the library of the Switch and building a new system, maybe Nintendo can get away with it. You know, they can afford to fail a whole other generation, but I think the expectation is totally different now. Like, cause people have these libraries of, you know, even the Xbox guy was like, we lost the Xbox One generation because the PlayStation users built up their digital libraries and, you know, they have them by the bees over there.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's something to say. Yeah. You know, you got a library and on a Sony or an Xbox, like you're less likely to switch teams.
That's completely true.
You got like,
you know, and it's
two
it's
generations almost, of games in your library, you know, it's like,
mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah,
like
exactly.
Like, it's people tough buy to a
think
Switch,
about defecting.
You know? To you know, without all their old games they bought. Like I bought so many Switch. I bought more games in my life. Well, on any system than the Switch. The Switch is just like I bought so many digital games for that thing. It's crazy.
I know. And you got to keep that stuff in mind now. Maybe Nintendo doesn't, because they would never play by the rules. They make their own rules.
As well.
But it's true. It's tough to think about in this day and age, you know, giving up your digital library when 90% of it is a lot of people's digital library. It's digital now.
Totally. I've heard it.
It's interesting times.
Yeah, I've heard it could be tough. I watched this one video of a modern vintage gamer, and he dove into the tech of the Switch and the NVIDIA chip that they're rumored to be using for the next Switch. And they're like, it might not be possible for this chip to run these old games.
Wow.
Unless, you know, but, you know, they've gotten past that in the past. Like, what did, I forget what system they just like, was it the Super Nintendo? They had like an NES chip in it. Or no, not that. I think it was a Sega system they put. Like the last gen's chip in the fucking new one. So it could run the old games or something. I forget what system is. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Could they just put the old Tegra chip in every new Switch just to run the old games? I don't know.
Yeah. Who's to say?
Who's to say? Zelda's great, though. I'm enjoying it. I'm trying to live in the moment.
Keep playing Zelda.
I'm going to.
I will live through you currently. I'll be checking in on you, Chuck.
Thank you. Please do. I'm gonna play right after we finish up here. I'm gonna go out there and play.
Good. Let's kick it up a notch then. Move this thing along, huh?
How about you? You got anything going on in your life?
Well, I want to talk about this, and I talked about it. I was last Friday. I was on Brian Rummel's YouTube channel on his Horror Talk live show. Thank you, Brian, for having me on. Check out his YouTube channel, youtube.com/Brian Rummel. But I talked about this and almost regret not saving it for our show. But I don't even know if you've seen this movie, but I watched, Chuck, the movie Birdemic.
No, I haven't seen it.
You ever seen this movie?
No. Did you get your box set?
I got the box set, but I watched it on Peacock. I watched Birdemic on Peacock.
Of course. Dale, maybe you should stop buying movies, buying Blu-rays.
You know, it's true.
Doesn't seem to work out for you.
It's true. I'm getting better. I'm getting better.
You'll be thankful better. In 40 years when Peacock's not around anymore, and you still have your Birdemic discs, right?
Exactly. When I want to talk about it. With someone
to show your grandchildren,
Birdemic: Shock and Terror.
I haven't seen these movies. I really should. I've known about them for a long time, and I just never. But anyway, you watched a Birdemic.
I watched a Birdemic, and I don't regret not saving something for the show, but this I almost regret not saving it for the show. Mm. But how would I know what we needed to save for the show if I didn't watch it? Right.
True.
Chuck, I mean, this movie is bad. It's so bad.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I mean, this movie's from 2010.
Yeah.
Where's the sensibilities of filmmaking with somebody that has so much access to a greater array of filmmaking equipment and technologies? And you wind up with a movie like Birdemic. And I couldn't help but think about the fervor and optimism that our director James Nguyen possesses to self finance this movie. It gave me a Tetsuo vibes, because the movie was made over the weekend for like 4 years.
Wow.
And it's dripping with conservationalist messages.
Oh, really?
He was inspired after watching The Inconvenient Truth. And like, it's not just about birds attacking. It's birds attacking because, you know, the ice caps are melting and there's greenhouse gases. And like every word out of somebody's mouth is like, maybe we should do things to improve our situation. It's wild to me that it could be the best movie of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the right eyes.
Yeah.
So.
And it's all the birds are CGI, right?
Oh, Chuck, it is absurd. The amount of the CGI is absurd. There was not even like a tennis ball on a string for the actors to look at.
Yeah.
and the CGI is insane. It doesn't go with the movie. It is like from CGI from 1994 in this movie from 2010. And the birds, the eagles, they just flap their wings. And like, it's like a screen. It's like a screensaver. They might flap their wings, but like skim across somebody's face, like in their neck region. And then there'll be CGI blood like spurting from a neck. And it's like, oh, that eagle just scraped the shit out of, like literally killed somebody. But it's just like the same motion of that the eagle's doing by like the eagles are attacking. And it's just like a flock of like the same eagle. Yeah. In two different colors, and they're just flapping their wings. It's but like you have to use your imagination. Yeah. To imagine that these birds are just absolutely unleashed.
Wow.
Because they're not unleashed on screen.
It's just copy and pasted.
They copied and pasted birds and however many birds the screen could hold at the time. There's like a perfect, like, you know, hexagonal shape of like nine birds, and they're just like,
really?
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Oh, man, I gotta see it. Wow. Are you looking forward to watching more of them? There's three, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I am like borderline obsessive. I need to dig into the special features of my Birdemic shock and terror. I need to listen to the commentary. Yeah. I need everything.
This director, he sounds like a character. I listened to that Severin podcast episode where they talked about it.
Right.
It did. It very much intrigued me. I got to say. He seems like a real character, this guy.
I mean, the price of admission, if you have Peacock, is so low.
Oh, that's right.
Everyone, go out there and watch the first Birdemic, please. And maybe look inside before you drop that low star review.
Yeah.
Like if you just read it, while you're watching, read the Wikipedia page, because just the stuff that James Nguyen went through to like self install himself into the Cannes Film Festival and like with like printouts of, pronounced that just said like birdemic.com.
Wow.
But he like misspelled birdemic.com and it said biddemic.com at Cannes Film Festival. That's like, that's the guerrilla marketing that was going around.
It's misspelled.
Biddemic.com.
That rolls so much.
And it's wild, dude. It's wild. It warmed my heart to see this guy.
Yeah.
I need to know more about him.
Wow.
So that was that's what I spent my time working with. It's amazing.
It's awesome. Did you log it in Letterboxd? I didn't see a log.
We need more eyes on this. No, yeah. It's why didn't I stop logging things in March? I gotta get back to it. I know. Okay.
A friend of mine,
but I don't even think I could give this.
A friend of mine was in talks to do a Birdemic comic book, but never happened. Mm. Never happened. But that means this guy's open to it. So maybe I'll do the Birdemic comic after I watch this thing.
Oh,
no, just kidding. Just kidding.
No, 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 Chuck, no. We need to press this. We need to push this. We need the Bat and Spider street team out there pushing.
God.
You need to ensconce yourself into the Birdemic world, so you can get a feel for how you're going to write these characters in the book.
I know. Yeah, I know. How would you do that? I guess, actually, that might be kind of fun to draw the comic, but never draw the birds and just get like the CGI models from the movie makers and just copy and paste them onto the panel so it looks terrible.
Oh my God.
That might actually be the way to go. Interesting. Now the wheels are turning.
And like a sticker pack of the CGI birds, but you could put them wherever you wanted to.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, wow.
On some of the pages.
Oh, we could make it like a, build your own Birdemic. That would be cool.
Because in Birdemic, it doesn't matter where the birds are.
Yeah.
They could be anywhere on the screen.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter. The actors don't know where they are. It is something.
Wow. Well, it's
so let's push for this graphic novel.
You've definitely got me excited for Birdemic. I gotta watch this for myself finally. Is it time?
It's time. I mean, geez, we are bees deep in podcasting, and we haven't even talked about our main subject.
Yeah, geez, you're gonna have to cut a lot of that out, Dale. Murders in the Rue Morgue, 1932. Bela Lugosi. Directed by Robert Flory. What you got here? You got Bela Lugosi. He plays this guy named Dr. Miracle. I loved hearing this. Anyone who said this name on screen, I just loved hearing this word Miracle. I loved hearing it come out of these players' mouths. I loved it. I love the sound of it. I love that it's basically Miracle, but with a K. But it still manages to sound menacing. Miracle. Anyway. Bela plays Dr. Miracle. He's traveling with a carnival. He's a sideshowman, but he believes himself to be a little bit better than his peers. He's out there That's pushing true. Real science. He's got himself an ape, a beast of the jungle, and he's showing it. And he's spreading these this heresy about a man coming from ape. You heard of this, Dale? It's a thing.
Maybe in 1845. It's pretty rare.
Yeah.
To hear such witchcraft.
Yeah, 1840s. Yeah, we gotta say. Yeah. So yeah, he's up there showing all these Parisians this bloody ape, this beast from the jungle. But Dr. Miracle, he's talking to this ape. He understands its language. He's translating to the audience what the ape's saying. And the ape.
Yeah.
What does the ape say? He says he's lonely. He wants a lady friend. So Dr. Miracle, after hours, after the carnival shuts down, he's going around Paris looking for ladies of the night, luring them to his carriage, bringing them back to his horrible science lab dungeon, and mixing ape blood into their bloodstream. Just blood mix. Just outright squirting ape blood into their vascular system. All right? Because he wants to make an ape lady for his dear friend, the ape. But Dale, these women just keep dying. They can't handle the ape blood. It's too strong. And
what's it going to take?
Yeah. And we got two young students unraveling the riddle of all these dead bodies showing up in the river, and Dr. Miracle's appearance in Paris. So that's Murders in the Rue Morgue. It almost has a little bit to do with the original story. This is based on a Edgar Allan Poe story. It's more of the school of adaptation where it takes elements from that story, adds some new ones, shakes it up in a bag, and throws it up on the table there.
Sounded like there was basically so little to go on from the short story that they needed to jazz it up for a feature length film.
Yeah, I mean. It's very different, because the short story is basically the first, from what I know, it's like the first version of a Sherlock Holmes story. So it's like, it's centered on this guy, Dupin, who is like super deduction guy. Like he uses logic and reason, deduction to solve. He does it for fun. He's like obsessed. And this in the original story, a double murder happens. Noah, the police are helpless. They can't figure out how this happened. The room it happened in, the windows are locked from the inside. One of the women is shoved up the chimney, feet first, and the other one is outside the window on the ground with her head chopped off. And which they use elements of this in this movie, but no one can figure it out. And this guy is nerd just for fun, him and his buddy. They're like, well, let's go to this crime scene and see if we can figure it out. And he figures out it was an ape owned by a sailor who escaped from the sailor's house. The sailor was just trying to sell the ape. He's going to make a lot of money selling this ape they brought back from Borneo.
Right.
But it's all the main thing of the story is like watching this super mind deduct and figure it out.
Mm.
Like a Sherlock Holmes story.
I remember reading it. I think I read it in eighth grade. Read a couple short Poe stories.
Oh, cool.
I don't remember. Jack. I remember Jack.
Jacket.
I remember that. I remember this one and the other one. What's the other one?
Raven? The Raven, maybe?
The one was, is it a room? About a room?
Oh, Telltale Heart? The ticking heart under the floor? I remember that one.
From school. Wrong.
But yeah, they kind of don't, like they sort of have
Mask of the Red Death.
Oh, okay.
Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah. But they kind of don't have that whole wonderkind inspector aspect in this movie. They kind of just threw that out, which is sort of the main gist of the story.
This, man, this is a fun movie. And
I loved it so much.
I keep thinking about these old horror movies like 1932.
Yeah.
Murders in the Rue Morgue. Like they're just getting comfortable with movie making as a medium and storytelling. And people are already like punching up how we can use this to entertain and scare the crap out of people.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And this, I couldn't stop thinking about that concept with this movie. Even more so, maybe just because I was thinking about it, but this is after Dracula, but something so absurd as this, there's not, it's like more grounded in reality because Dracula is like this otherworldly being, but this is just a mad scientist kidnapping women.
Yeah.
And shoving ape blood into their veins.
Totally.
And like, how frightening would that be? What is it? Betty Davis originally auditioned for this, but they didn't think she was like sexy enough for this movie in 1932. So they got,
Sydney Fox?
Sydney Fox in here. But for 1932, you know, they were pushing the limits. A lot of the public and the movie reviewers felt they were pushing the limits in terms of what they were showing. What was happening to a female? They're just using it to just scare people, and I loved thinking about that during this movie.
Yeah, this is it's pre-code, so it's like, you know, especially like that scene when he has the one girl tied up to that like cross thing, and he's like taking her blood, however he's taking it, and she's just screaming. And he's just, he's just like, he's not even paying attention to her screen. Like he's so obsessed with doing his experiment.
He's like pleading with her to just sit still. Yeah. It'll be over in a second.
What's your problem?
Yeah, man.
That was
a harrowing scene.
It's harrowing. And that murder scene that happens, those two guys, I don't know what they were hinting at. I mean, that girl was obviously a sex worker, I think. And I don't know if it was like, you know, her pimp fighting with a John or if it was two Johns fighting over her or something, but that was a gruesome fight. The guy's got slashes and open wounds on his chest. And they're like fighting in the fog. And you see that close-up of the hand with the knife go down and stab that guy.
Yeah.
It's intense for, the time period they shot that. I was like, wow. You know, a couple years later, they wouldn't be able to put that in there.
And it was that shot was great because there was like this faraway shot where you could see like the street lamp and then that the two were fighting.
Yeah.
But the fog was rolling in and it was so far away that you could just get, you could get a feel for what was happening. But it was like this wide shot that would be taken for granted now. Like, you know, people splurting all over themselves at the cinematography of a shot there, like that.
There are some really cool shots in this. Like they're putting like, how about that? the joyful part of the movie where it's like all the lovers in the park, like on their day dates. But there's that shot where Sydney Fox is on that swing and they attached the camera to that swing and it was just going back and it was such a great like choreographed scene and when
like how groundbreaking was that at the time?
I know. They're like, you know, fucking Robert Flory's like, I'm going to put this camera on this swing. And the crew's just like,
yeah.
Say that again. Say that again, Hoss.
What are you talking about?
What do you mean? How are you going to do that? What are you crazy
or something?
Yeah. No, we're going to do it.
And the audio during that scene was so great because Sydney Fox was just as clear as her male counterpart. Like they both had mics right over top of their heads. But
the way
the camera was moving for Sydney Fox on the swing was amazing.
So cool.
Bela Lugosi
fucking
was a friggin' vision.
Oh my God.
Of like he just didn't look right. And that's what he had going for him.
Yeah.
I think. It was a weird look, and that's the best way you could put it. It wasn't like completely awful, but he had the unibrow and this wild
haircut.
It was like a close cut, wild haircut.
I would kill for that hair. I would love to have that kind of
please.
Hair. Like it's kind of curly, but it just grows back and up, you know?
Yeah.
And he had those weird spit curls on his,
Yes.
Or in front of his ears on both sides. That was a cool choice.
I wonder if that was real, those spit curls.
You mean like natural to him?
It was.
It looked like natural.
Yeah, was that his real hair?
It looked like they greased it up.
Oh, I loved it.
I started watching a free version of this on YouTube and 10 minutes in, I got frustrated because it looked like garbage. So I rented it and I was so glad I did because I was missing so much stuff. Like when you first see Bella taking his carriage out Paris, I couldn't see the ape sitting in the carriage with him. I had no idea the ape was with him the whole time.
Neither did I.
Oh, really? Did you watch the YouTube one? I should have texted you.
I did.
I was like, you're missing half the movie.
I was like, this is from 1932. This is how it looks. This is just how it looks.
I couldn't believe it. When I switched over, I rewatched that scene. I was like, oh my God, there's an ape sitting in that carriage. Every time you see the carriage, there's an ape in there. Eric, the ape, he's going around the city.
I'm blown away. He's on display. He's on parade.
Yeah. How about
this ape?
Yeah. Let's talk about Eric.
How about the ape?
Eric. First of all, this name. Not a scary name. In 1932, was the name Eric scary? Was it menacing?
Was it menacing? Yeah. Was it a Satanist?
Was it a weird name to have? Was it not uncommon?
Right.
Maybe.
Was it a name of a fallen angel in the, like, you know?
I don't know.
Was Eric a fallen angel?
Maybe.
In the church?
Maybe. I don't know.
Was that the name of the actor of the ape? That was the name of the ape in the movie, or that was the name of the ape that starred in the movie?
It would be awesome if they just named him Eric because the guy was the guy in the suit.
Yeah.
Eric, get over here. I loved
Eric, get over here.
Every time they cut to a close up, they cut to stock footage of a chimp?
Oh.
Chimpanzee?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was so seamless.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
They, before or during production, they slashed the budget to 90,000. And then I think the movie tested so well, or based on the success of Dracula, they pumped the budget back up to $180,000 or something like that. So with that extra money, they went to a zoo and got stock footage of a chimp. It must have been a chimp, right?
It looked like
a
chimp.
Yeah. But the splicing and editing of the close-up of a chimp that wasn't even the same room as the actor and the actor who played the ape, Eric, it was amazing. I was completely sold. I couldn't tell if this was a real ape.
Yeah.
When like the camera was over the shoulder of the ape looking out of the cage. I was like, is that really the ape? Because I just saw up close face of the ape. And I couldn't help but think of like the living conditions of an ape in 1932 at a zoo.
God.
I just couldn't help but think how bad things were for apes in 1932.
A poor ape.
Who knows what they had to do to an ape to get the shots that they got?
Well.
Christ.
Oh, yeah. The one in the zoo, not Eric in the ape suit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But there was one clear shot of a human in the ape suit. It was the best. Just the best. It was the best. For all the wrong reasons, it was the best.
Yeah. His hands would be very stiff all of a sudden. You're like, oh, that's a guy in a suit there. That's awesome. Yeah. But yeah,
almost like see his like eyes behind the mask.
Yeah. They did a good job. There were so many good shots. Like the shadow work, Dale. Oh my God, the shadow work. Just like
the shadow work.
Draping the ape in darkness.
Miracle.
Yeah. Going around the city.
Miracle's like, yeah. And when he's like addressing the audience in the tent in the beginning.
Man, that scene. I mean, from when you see when our couple walks into that tent and Bella, this first time we see him, he leans over her shoulder and says, no, sit up front, you know, from that, you just, it's like death touching you on the shoulder when Bella shows, it's like, oh my God, there he is. And then he gets up on stage and he just he was like, he was so good. Like you just watch him in this movie and it's like, oh my God, this guy just commands the room.
I wonder if Bella got paid piecemeal for every, I wonder if he got paid for every time he said the word mademoiselle.
Paid extra.
Because if you were playing a drinking game, you would be dead. You know? He said it so many times. I was like, this guy, he's probably in hell behind the scenes. He is in living hell. Like the French need another word for ma'am or lady and they need to teach it to Bella ASAP.
Yeah.
The poor guy.
Poor guy. He's up there.
You know?
He's trying. He's doing his best.
The way he was trying to force himself into, first force himself to get the address of the lady and force himself into the lady's room and to get her to come. It was insane.
This is high tier stalking. This is S tier stalking.
Oh my
skills.
Yes, completely. He was not going to take no for an answer. Basically if there were less people around, man, it would have been bad. It would have been real bad.
He was pretty polite about the whole thing though. He never got physical. He let the ape get a little physical, but he never he never lost his cool.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, I'll figure out another way.
When he,
Mademoiselle. Yeah,
that was Mademoiselle. When you find out that he unleashes the ape and lets the ape do his bidding.
Yeah.
I was like, this movie just went up to another level. Like, this is not just an ape behind bars suffering. Like, he is Bella's coworker.
Yeah. Well, I love that.
I was like, I did not expect it.
Yeah. I love how they, like, that. You know, I love that whole goofy thing where he's like, yeah, I learned the ape's language. I can talk to him. Like, and it makes sense that they're traveling around in the carriage picking up ladies to experiment on them together. They're just sitting in that carriage together like two old friends going out on the town.
They really are.
And Eric's he's not tied up or anything. He's just hanging out.
God. Man, I need to rent this and see that. The not until the moment where I realized that Bella lets Eric go and kidnap the women for him, I was like, he's really talking to the ape in the beginning of that movie.
Yeah.
He's really interpreting what the ape is saying. He really is.
Yeah. Oh,
he's not just like making up a script, you know, when the ape is just hooting and hollering.
I loved.
So good.
We talked about his, I loved his set, his laboratory set. I loved all those beakers and stuff and that menacing torture cross that he had behind him. All those shots were incredible. Oh my God. Just the stuff of nightmares.
Mm-hmm. As soon as the floor under the torture cross opens up and the victim just falls into the river, like that is some world building right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was creepy as hell.
Later when the medical student's like pressing him, he's like, you got a house here in Paris, right, Bella? He's like, no, I'm traveling with the carnival. excuse me.
He's like, I live in this tent right here.
I just saw you, your dungeon lab with a trap door in it. Yeah. I think you've been here longer than a few weeks. I gotta say that takes some planning.
I like your impression of Bella. No, I live in this tent's my home. Yeah,
I live in this tent
right here that right you're here. In.
What are you talking about?
Talking about.
Get out of here. Let's talk about the Goofus and Gallant, our two heroes. I don't even remember their names, but
are they our med students?
Yeah, our med students who you know, the ones the smart, obsessed one who kind of cracks the code of what Dr. Miracle's doing. His girlfriend is the object of Ape the Eric's desire. And then his buddy, Chumley, this guy, he's a little more nervous. He's cracking jokes and annoyed that his roommate won't eat his macaroni he's been slaving over. You know?
Oh, man. I almost posted the handle to the pot he was making his macaronis in, almost posted to the mildly penis subreddit because it did mildly look like a penis.
The end of that scene, I mean, there was like, I read, I'll talk about the short story, but the original short story has a little bit of gay subtext, I got to say. I don't know if Poe was gay or if he's maybe gay. I don't know. But that almost carried over to this, to these two, their roommate situation. It definitely had a, you know, almost like an old married couple vibe to their scenes together.
Big time. Big time.
And God, I loved watching this guy cook that macaroni and nag Pierre, his best friend. I loved it.
Eat your lunch.
Dr. Miracle. He's a strange man.
Pierre.
Oh yeah.
Usually I'm annoyed by, because all these the things with these old horror movies, they always had some like comedic relief in there. And this is no exception. But I kind of welcomed it in this one. It didn't bother me. And I love their goofy scenes together. And I love the end of that scene when he's just so fed up with Pierre and he's like, Pierre. And then they just cut to the next scene. Like, it was like a sitcom. It was like one of those sitcom break, you know. And all right, everyone hold. Roll credits. It was that kind of thing.
Right.
Oh, Pierre.
That, meanwhile, the whole time he's stirring that macaroni, it's not getting hotter. I don't know what that macaroni was consisted of. It looked like it was like konjac noodles or something.
Yeah. It was like soba noodles.
Not pasta. Yes. Yeah.
And he had soba noodles in a tiny little pan. Then it looked like he poured some old soup or old stew on top of it. And that was lunch.
Yeah.
What was going on?
Just get a little, fill their bellies. Yeah. They're poor med students, you know?
Was that for both of them? Because that was the smallest pan.
That was, yeah, I agree. I mean, they had this meager, meager meal. I want to talk about when the body falls out from the chimney. That had to have been a shock heard around the world.
Yeah.
In 1932.
Oh my God.
That, like, just the idea that a body is shoved in a chimney is insane.
Yeah, it's to super unsettling.
Audiences, it's got to be. Yes.
And that was like,
and it's and that was,
yeah.
And that was just one of the victims, right? Like, one of the victims was just tossed away and hidden.
Yeah, that was her mom, I think.
Oh, that was her mom. Yeah. Yeah, that was her mom.
The main girl, Sydney Fox, was her mom. Because, the ape comes in. I know. It's such a gross, otherworldly idea. And in the original story, that's like one of the main, the police are just so confused because the idea of a body shoved up into a chimney, that's like, no man, how could a man do this? Like, that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the morgue. So Rue Morgue, it's the name of a street, right? Because I've been to Quebecdale, all the streets are called Rue something. But I guess they took that and they decided to make it an actual morgue in this movie. And not just the name makes of more, a street.
Yeah. Would make more sense, I guess, to a wider pop.
I guess to wider population. Americans. Yeah. But I loved this morgue. I loved the morgue. I loved the head of the morgue, this guy who writes down all the people, all the dead bodies that are brought in. He's like, all right, what's their name? Their occupation, how old they were, how they died. And I loved how no one had a good answer for almost any of these questions for all the bodies brought in.
He's like, what do you want from me?
Yeah. What was the one he asked for the age?
He's like, you can pay me and find out yourself. Yeah. If you pay me on the side, you can find out anything you want all by yourself.
The one who was like, what's the age of the dead person? The guy said, I don't know, any age was his answer. Doesn't matter.
Profession? They say he was a scientist or something. Death caused by an ape.
And that weird coding of, they couldn't say the word prostitute or something, because they were like, he asked for that girl's occupation. The guy just said professional. And gave the guy a look, and they both knew what that meant. I was like, whoa, okay.
Beautiful.
Dale, would you?
They got this working relationship, the med student and this guy. It's just like, bring me the body.
Yeah. Bring me the blood, please, in a matchbox.
Thank you.
Thanks. Here's all the money I have in the world. 5 francs. Oh, that guy wanted the macaroni. That was funny. That guy, the morgue guy came and he was sniffing up that macaroni. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. That's right. That's right. He was down for it.
He got shut down hard though.
Yeah. I liked, ultimately what I expected from the description of the movie to what we got. I liked what we got more. It was more of just a 60 minute following of Dr. Miracle, and we don't really get to see, or we don't need to see what happens if there's successful ape blood transfusion into a human woman.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that he's collecting them and murdering them to begin with, and because it's not working out. I liked that more than I think I would have liked, a bride of, ape man, Eric the Ape.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean,
I thought that's what I was going to get.
Yeah, there was definitely a part of me that was like, God damn it, are they going to show an ape woman or not? Like, I need this right now.
Right, because we're getting close to the end of the runtime.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you're right. It's more about the journey. It's more of Dr. Miracle's lining up of bodies and his obsession.
Yeah.
It's more about that and not like, oh, he's actually going to make like an ape woman by putting blood in a lady, ape blood in a lady.
It's like a creative way of telling the story of a kidnapper serial killer.
Yeah.
He just happens to be, trying to infuse them with ape blood.
Yeah. And it's great. It's like the big idea that they added to like the bones of the short story that wasn't in the short story, but it just like gives it that little science fiction twist of like, oh, the horror of mixing blood, you know, like mixing mm-hmm. animal blood with human blood. What would happen? And I guess in 1932, that was still like a, you know, I don't know, maybe you would turn into an ape person. I don't know. We don't know. Right? I'm not going to try it. You try it.
Yeah. I mean, who would try that?
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. That was that. I loved it. And you know, this is the 1840s too. Like, so even if they knew in the 30s, but did they even know about blood types in the 30s? I don't know.
Back to Miracle's hat. His hat he was wearing when he was stalking Paris. I love this hat. I don't know how to describe this hat. It was like a furry sort of canonical hat, a wide brim.
Oh, yeah.
I just loved watching him take this thing on and off and the shadows it would put on a wall. I just love this hat.
Mm.
A lot of hats in this. How about drink every time Sydney Fox said bonnet in this movie? She got
that's another one.
Dr. Miracle's gift of the bonnet. God damn.
She like insists her mom come and see her. And her new bonnet, right that second.
Look at this.
Like,
look at this.
Like, mom is doing something, but okay.
Yeah, mom's fucking running a house. She doesn't have time to see her stupid bonnet. God damn. They gotta make it. They should make a figure of that. Dr. Miracle in that hat. I would buy that.
Oh, God. Yeah. Put that back up in the Universal Monster.
I know. They just put that.
Universal Blast horror.
Put that link up there for the black and white Frankenstein for $20. I might actually buy that.
That's really nice. It's really cool. Nice quality.
God damn.
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh, can I? How about Miracle's assistant, Janos, the black one, as he was credited in? Was his blackface? Because like. Early on, it looked like he had makeup on to make him look darker. But then later on, he didn't have makeup on. And I didn't know if he was supposed to be a black guy or just mysterious. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, because his name was Janos.
Yeah.
Like, is that telling you? He's, you know, yeah. I agree. Or is it just filthy?
Maybe he, I don't know. Maybe he shoveled coal for Dr. Miracle and that's why he was so darkened.
In the beginning, when our med students are like wandering the fair, there's a skit of American, American cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
One of the Indians was a, he didn't speak, but one of the Indians was Iron Eyes Cody, the weeping Indian in the pollution commercial.
Really? Holy crap. The one single tear guy.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Yeah. Wow.
How about that?
IMDb comes through again.
The guy was in a ton of stuff.
Wow. I mean, for as problematic as those carnivals are, like, I gotta say, I would, if I could time travel and go to one of those things, I would like to go.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I mean, how fun was that? These fucking Parisians out just totally sloshed, going through this insane carnival of, you know, freaks from around the world. And, God.
Yeah. It's true. Like, you know,
just seeing things from distant lands, you know, just like,
yes, oh exactly. In the 1840s, you're seeing stuff from America.
Yeah.
It's like, what is happening?
And a man talking to an ape. So we don't get a lady ape, but we get the beast turning on its master. Miracle gets owned.
Oh yeah. Huge.
And they go on sort of a King Kong ending. This is right before King Kong, isn't it? King Kong's 33. Wow.
Yeah.
King Kong, you got some answering to do. Because what happens in this movie, Dale, our ape grabs our lady and runs along the rooftops.
Uh-huh.
In Paris. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on here?
I love the ragdoll lady that they attached to the ape, to the guy in the ape costume to run around. It looked great, actually. I mean, it was hilariously frantic.
It did. It showed like his, his strength.
Yeah.
In a cool way.
Yeah. And Pierre's just fucking, how about Pierre just stealing a gun from a police officer? The police officer just going, yeah, whatever.
Pierre's got
almost no reaction.
Is Pierre not going to have any answering to do?
God. Not after he shoots this ape and saves the day. There was that last scene though, I think there was some movie magic going on. Did you notice around the ape when he was on that rooftop when he gets shot? It looked like there was like they were imposing the background on that ape. Because it looked like they were like manually cutting the ape out of each frame. There was some weird halo around the ape.
Oh.
It looked like they needed to put him in front of a different background. I don't know. I'm sure the answer's out there, but I don't know. I was like, oh, interesting.
Movie magic.
Yeah, old-timey movie magic. I love this movie. I avoid watching these old Poe things because I don't know. I have it in my head. It's going to be boring, like stuffy old Poe stuff. I mean, whatever. I don't have anything against Poe. I have this preconceived notion about it for some reason, but.
Yeah.
Every time I finally watch them, I'm like, oh, these are fucking awesome. You know, it's not like they're sticking directly to these Poe stories. They're like, they're wild and out. And this one is wild. And it's 60 minutes. What are you going to complain about?
You know? Seriously. It's a wild ride. So it's great. I had a great time, Chuck. Great pick.
Do we have any, listener feedback this week?
We may. I'm going to check now. I'm going to check over at batandspiderpod@gmail.com. That's where I check. Also, I'm going to check over on the official Bat and Spider hotline at 315-544-0966.
Rotten blood. You have rotten blood.
Rotten blood.
Mademoiselle.
He gets so angry at her. For her blood not taking the ape blood.
God.
It's your fault, he says. She's just screaming. She dies from fright. Or no, she dies from ape blood.
God.
Would you die if you had ape blood injected into you, Dale? I know we have someone in the medical profession listening to this actually right now. So if you would be so kind to answer our question.
Please.
What would happen if you had ape blood injected into your bloodstream?
CC doctors listening.
Yeah.
Or veterinarians.
My guess is you might get a little sick somehow, but eventually your blood would just destroy it and break it down. Your body. I don't know. What do you think? How's that sound?
That's your hypothesis.
That's my guess.
Okay. Chuck, as luck would have it.
Yeah.
We have no correspondence this week, which is
good.
Okay. You know?
Yeah. No, we chatted a while on this, so.
We did.
But that means, Dale, unfortunately, you have to pick our next victim.
It was the summer of 69.
It was the summer of 69. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I see this Rene Cordova. I got to see more of these movies.
Rene Cordova.
Listen to this title, Dale. The Wrestling Women versus the Aztec Mummy.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Sounds real good.
I think I got one. Chuck, I got one. From 1972, Terror at Red Wolf Inn.
Oh, It was the summer of 72. Oh my God, this poster, Dale. Wow. This is the
feast your eyes.
It's the horror of 70s cooking book covers. You know, did you ever see images from old cooking books? And you're like, God, the colors are so disgusting.
Yes.
But with this, it's like severed heads and tomatoes for eyeballs in the spaghetti. Oh, God.
This is one of those cookbooks where you would find like cottage cheese as the main ingredient, but used in a way it's not supposed to be. Like a melon, cottage cheese and melon or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And gelatin is in every recipe somehow.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find a shorter description here. Okay. College student Regina wins a getaway vacation at the quiet Red Wolf Inn, which is run by a friendly elderly couple, but it gradually becomes clear that something is amiss. Well, that's very vague, but... Right.
But you couple that with the image...
That poster.
Ugh. Of the movie.
I know.
You're in for it.
We're in for it. Directed by Bud Townsend.
It looks like he did a lot of button speedo kind of movies.
The Beach Girls, love scenes. Nightmare and Wax,
though. Hello.
Oh, yes. Great pick, Dale. I look forward to it like I do every week. You're a bright, shining star in my otherwise dull week, dull life.
Aww.
You know, I don't have to say that to anybody.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
So next week, Terror at Red Roof Inn. What is it?
Red Wolf.
Terror at Red Wolf Inn. Go to batandspider.com. Go to co-fi.com. Why do I pronounce it co-fi, but it's our Ko-fi page? Because it's just easier.
Because people wouldn't know that there's a dash in there. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. It's ko-fi.com/batandspider to become a denizen of the Black Dungeon and get access to exclusive episodes. A little behind the scenes, we were just tossing around the next episode, some ideas. So we're going to get it in the works.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe some more muscle men. Discord. Spoilers.
Oh.
Sorry, I said it.
Join our Discord. Dale, that's a blast.
I just wanted you to know I'm still in my wrestling thing, by the way. It's still happening over here. I just got an Orange Cassidy t-shirt the other day.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It's another level now.
It's happening. Do you know his origin, Dale? I've been dying to ask you if you know where this
Orange Cassidy's.
Do you know where his character's from?
No.
This is going to make you hard as a rock, Dale. When I heard this, I was like, I need to tell Dale this immediately. Orange Cassidy bases his whole character off of Paul Rudd's character in Wet Hot American Summer.
Get the hell out of here. Yeah. Get the hell out of here.
And I haven't seen it in a long time, but apparently the theme music he uses, that Jefferson Starship song is in the movie too.
Jane,
yeah. He comes out to Jane. It's incredible.
Oh, are you, how come, you know what? We have so many people in our life that could have said that before
I know.
Now. Chuck, I look to you.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I need an Orange Cassidy t-shirt.
You need an Orange Cassidy t-shirt.
I need to queue up some AEW wrestling. AEW Dark. The Dark matches. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. You got to watch. It's magic when that song comes on. You get chills. And you know what's coming.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Yeah. Holy shit.
Also, he's from our area.
Oh, my God.
He's from New Jersey, Pennsylvania area. He started wrestling there.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of us, basically. And he's our age. So we're basically going to be friends with him somehow.
Yeah. Let us triangulate and get him on the show.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Chuck, I mean, you would just flip my world upside down. I need to reprioritize what's going on in my life.
Oh, man.
Thank you for that.
Sure. No problem.
Until next time, I'm Bat, he's Spider, and go listen to our podcast.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Rotten blood.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.